How to Get Stupid White Men Out of Office. It's an edited collection written by 12 young political artists and activists who are members of the League of Pissed Off Voters. The book, which includes political organizing strategies and essays about youth who have, quote, won or swung elections, shows young people how to play the electoral politics game on their own terms. Joining us today to talk about Stupid White Men is one of the editors of the collection, Adrian Brown.
Right, and also, you know, just to make note, the name of the organization is the League of Pissed Off Voters, and that's their name, so we're not trying to use more foul language.
And of course, it also goes by some more conventional names in some incarnations.
Yeah, I mean, the League of Pissed Off Voters is like the umbrella term for two sister organizations, which is the League of Independent Voters and the League of Young Voters. And the League of Independent Voters does all the voter organizing that's talked about in the book, and we're actually going to be forming a PAC. And the League of Young Voters is a training institute. So, yeah, okay. If it offends people, we can use the other terms, but we find that most people actually are like, oh, yeah, that really is me. So it's fine.
And, of course, you're speaking to all kinds of disenchanted young people especially. Can you just tell us about sort of like the genesis of this book and the project and how you got involved?
I'll tell you the short version. My co-editor, Billy Umsky Wimsatt, was out in California trying to vote, and he got a progressive voter guide from the San Francisco Bay Guardian. And he was like, whoa, this is dope. This actually helps me go in the voter booth, and I actually know what I'm doing. They must have these all over the country. And Billy being Billy, he starts calling up everyone like, do you have this? And everyone's like, no, we don't have these. No one else is doing them. And from there, he started saying, like, what do we have? What is working in places and what don't we have? And as he started doing that, we came up with these 20 true stories of amazing campaigns that have been swung or won by young people. And we thought, you know, let's get this in a book. Let's put it together and let's try to get it out in time for the election so that folks know that they can read this and, you know, that it could be useful to them at their local level.
Mm-hmm. People might know Billy from Bomb the Suburbs and No More Prisons.
Yeah.
Well, you are a co-editor of the volume, and in your introduction, which is called I Hate Politics, Confessions of a Pleasure Activist.
That's me.
You, Adrian Brown, write that the radical right are for using finance and fiction to keep us distracted while they tie our ankles and wrists with the shackles of the present. The Patriot Act, the unending war, manipulative foreign policies, and the classist domestic ones. Meanwhile, the grassroots left is for pouting in the corner in a grass-stained dress, lollipops sullied by dirt, balloon deflated, occasionally sticking out its tongue. I feel like the song Holding Out for a Hero should be looped behind the left movement to make their apparent mission a bit more clear. So what's this all about and pleasure activism?
Yeah. I mean, basically, it's just, you know, I guess we get wrapped up in our integrity, and that can be a beautiful thing, like talking about what we stand for and what we care about and what upsets us in the world. But I think sometimes we let that take over our ability to act. And you know, I think that a lot of what's in this book is it's stories of not just how people did this, but it's stories of how you get to the point where you're frustrated enough to actually move. And the fact that there are clearly models out there for how that movement can happen and happen successfully. But first you have to get to that point where you're like, okay, I've complained. I sit and watch the news. I get upset. I throw things at the television. You know, I watch the daily news and I'm like, I love you, Jon Stewart. But at the end of the day, I'm tired of complaining. Complaining is not putting, you know, a check in my bank. It's not helping my retirement. It's not getting me jobs. It's not stopping the war in Iraq, right? Complaining is not going to do it. So what can do it? And, you know, like I say to my friends all the time, if there was a chaotic revolution happening tomorrow and we were organized and ready to go, you'd probably find us there. But I don't see that happening tomorrow, so this is where I am, right? Mm.
Well, one thing, you know, that many skeptical readers might approach this book with is just a disbelief in their ability to, like, make a difference with a vote or even, you know, 50 people voting if they can get that organized. I mean, the Democrats really don't stand for much, as WBAI listeners know, and asking young people to turn out en masse and get behind the Democrats is really not that inspiring to me, you know?
Right. I mean, that's a really valid point. I'm not a big fan of the Democrats myself. And I mean, I think one of the things that I like about the book is we're critical of both sides, you know? We're just as critical of the policies that came into play during Clinton's years as we are of what's been happening in the Bush years. But I think there's also, you know, something to keep in mind is you're not just voting someone in, and it's not just like throwing your support behind someone. It's also there comes a time you need to vote someone out, and you need to be organized about how that's going to happen, how you say, you know, you've done a horrible job, and so you're going to lose your job, right? And I think that that's more the angle that we're coming from. It's not how to get smart white men or stupid white men into office, right? It's how to get stupid white men out of office. And sometimes that means you have to choose the alternative and you have to show your power. One of the stories in the book that's really is powerful is it happened in South Dakota with the Lakota Indian tribe, where like their choice was the same thing, you know, this or that same looking white dude, right? And one of them happened to be a Democrat. But the point was that they came together as a community. They swung that election. So this or that person is not going to have to listen to what they say because they're an organized community, right? And what they care about, their issues, poverty, education, all those things that has been rife, you know, their community has been falling apart, now is on the front of the agenda.
So, the book actually deals with how do we get who we do want in office also?
That, you know, it's, basically, you know, you have to look at it as a short-term strategy and a mm-hmm. long-term strategy. And so far, we've been playing without strategy, right? I think one of the best quotes in there is Van Jones says, "We've gotten really good at playing marbles, and we can pick the colors, and we know exactly how to play our marbles, but we're playing marbles on a football field, right? We keep getting run over, right? So it's not only how are we going to get someone out of office, how are we going to organize our people, how are we going to get them to the polls, how are we going to make sure that we actually go to them with the voter registration instead of trying to make them come out, how are we going to absentee vote, all that stuff, how are we going to develop candidates that we stand behind, right?
Right.
So me personally, you know, if you read the book, you can probably tell, like, I'm a Kucinich kind of girl, you know, like, he really can rock my world, and he's a sweetheart, and I love him, right? And that's not an endorsement, I just like him, you know? But I understand, you know, I understand that this year, this is not the year for him to end up at the end of the year in office. This is the year for him to get on the board and say as much as he can. And then we have to develop and support the creation of candidates like that. We have to make sure that they actually have voices behind them that stand up for what they stand for, right? And he's standing for what we stand for, and so on. And that happens at the local level, right? You have to learn how to use support the candidates that are in your city and in your town and move up from there.
Another really inspiring story in the book that I really appreciated was that of Alicia Thomas.
She's amazing.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I just was in Atlanta, actually, this past weekend. I got to see Alicia, and I got to see Rashad Taylor, who was her 21-year-old campaign manager.
Wow.
And she,
and how old was Alicia?
And Alicia was, she was actually 23, I think, when she decided to run, 24 when she got into office.
State Assembly.
And she's State Assembly in Cobb County. And this woman is amazing. I mean, like, she ran for office in Cobb County, which is Newt Gingrich County, mm-hmm. right? It's mostly white, mostly older, mostly Republican. And this young black girl who went to Spelman had just moved into the neighborhood and was like, you know what, I'm going to run for office. And, you know, everyone laughed at her. Everyone was like, yeah, right. That's just not going to happen. You just can't win here. You know, they probably will lock you up in a booth and kill you. And she actually won. And the way that she won was going around to folks and finding out, like, what matters to you? I'm going to be your representative. I'll give you my cell phone number. You can call me at home. And identifying where her community was in Cobb County. Because mm-hmm. they're there, too. They're just not the ones who are in power, right? And getting them out to the polls and mobilizing them. And they, I mean, they were hot. Their campaign was amazing. And it was fun. You know, like, they enjoyed it. They were up in their house, like, listening to music and having a good time. And also running for office.
Mm-hmm. On the back of the book, where there's some little blurbs about the stories, it says about Alicia Thomas, this 24-year-old progressive black woman. How did she win a state legislative seat in suburban Cobb County, Georgia, the heart of Newt Gingrich County? She put her home number on 60,000 flyers and returned every call.
Exactly. And, you know, the thing is, people are like, you know, you run for office and, like, I can't put my cell phone out there. I'll get that, you know, too many calls, whatever. But she was getting, like, 20 calls a day or something, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's fine, right? You know, Michael Bloomberg should give us his number. I'll call him up. I won't call him a lot, you know, but I care about certain things I'd like to talk to him about. You know, I'd love to be able to call him up and tell him what I think.
And so what are you all doing to promote the book, to get the information that's in the book out into the community instead of it, you know, just being on a show?
Right. So, well, one of the things we did that I'm really proud of is our publisher is this amazing independent press in Brooklyn called Soft Skull. And their deal with us was we'll give you 20,000 free copies to do with what you will, right? And what we decided to do with those was focus on getting them into the hands of people in swing states. So we told people, if you live in a swing state, we'll send you a box of books for free or for $1, shipping costs, whatever. And we've been sending the books out. And we started out with 20,000. We have 300 books left in our office right now. So those books are out in the world. And then there's like 13,000 on bookshelves around the country, I believe. And right now we're sort of shifting into getting people to actually go out and buy the book, right? Because now there's all this word on the street. Like, we really haven't gotten a bad review yet. Because you know, the book does what it's supposed to do. You know, it's not like this is going to be the most beautiful book you ever read, but it is a useful tool. And so we got those books out, 20,000 free books, and then we're organizing people. We actually have a big, on April 17th and 18th, that's like the National Book Club Day, right, where everyone's pulling together. So they have one copy of the book, but they pull 10 people together, get everyone to read it, get people excited, figure out which strategy works best for their town, have everyone else go out and buy the book, and start working.
So we want to talk about a few of the tactics you're involved in, a couple other of the stories. Just so people know, these infamous swing states are Oregon, Nevada, New Mexico, Missouri, Florida, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Arizona, Arkansas, Maine, Iowa, New Hampshire, and West Virginia. There's quite a few.
You go, girl. That was 17.
Yeah. And, I mean, just so people know, a part of the strategy of this book is to call up all your friends in those states, you know, and tell them what's up and read the book and get involved. You know, of course, we shouldn't drop the ball in our own states either.
Yeah, I mean, the thing to remember is, like, we're really lucky here in New York. Or, like, you know, when I visit San Francisco, I'm like, oh, this is beautiful. You know, everybody's sort of on point. And we get to sit around and listen to a wonderful station like WBAI and, like, just be like, yes, you know. But there's folks all across the country who are frustrated and they need, like, our support. They need us to contact them. They need us to let them know what we're doing. We can't also forget what's happening here, yeah. Right? This is going to be the home of the Republican National Convention, right? And so we have to really be paying attention to how we're organizing here in our own city.
And we're going to be talking in a few minutes with some of the people who are organizing youth here in New York to do popular education in the lead up to the RNC.
Right, but for right now, we're speaking with Adrian Brown, one of the editors of the collection How to Get Stupid White Men Out of Office. In the book, or interspersed throughout the book, there are political sex surveys. What are those?
You know, yeah. Okay, so everybody's like, what is that? You're talking about sex? You're talking about sex? Basically, we originally did this whole survey where it was sort of like all these questions that were trying to link together the ideas of, like, politics and pleasure and, like, whatever. Now, you know, if you read it, the only real sex-based question is, like, you know, which of the candidates would be best in bed? So that's the only, you know, but it was really cute, actually, because I was sitting with Maddie Weiss's mom, Pam Costain, who's one of these big organizers of the Wellstone Action Committee out in Minnesota. And I was sitting with her when she first saw the book, and she opens it up, and the first thing she sees is Maddie Weiss, Political Sex Survey. And she's like, oh my God, what kind of book is this? Oh my God. And it was, like, so cute. But I was like, but it got your attention, right? You're going to turn and read it, right? And Maddie's got some brilliant strategies right there. So, you know what I'm saying? It's like the title is, you know, it's a little gimmicky, and it's just get people inside the book. Once they're in, it's a safe space, and we're going to have a great conversation. But, you know, we got to pull people in, so.
Yeah, some of the replies are great. Like, who would you most not want to sleep with?
Yeah.
Well, obviously George Bush, but there's some good reasons for it.
Brody.
But one of your favorite essays is about some organizing and just looking at Election Day in Puerto Rico. Do you want to read a little bit from the beginning there to get a sense of what it's like on Election Day in Puerto Rico?
Yeah, I'm going to read this. This is Aya de Leon, who's this amazing performance artist out in California, and it's called Aya de Leon is Running for President. So I'm just going to read this. I was visiting my family in Puerto Rico during the 2000 election. I'm Puerto Rican, but I'm from California, so I was not prepared for the way my people put on an election. In Puerto Rico, people treat the election the way we treat the Super Bowl or the World Series. I mean, folks put the party back in political party. And there's a sense of joy and celebration and connectedness. They have big parades and people are roller skating down the streets with their faces painted, blowing whistles. Young people who can't even vote yet are already affiliated with the political party, waving a flag, yelling, screaming. You have young people driving down the streets, setting out their car alarms intentionally to make noise like, woo, woo, woo. Or the other thing that people do is put their car in park and spin the wheels really fast. I mean, you couldn't sleep around the time of elections because people are just so loud. And the night before, the night of, just partying, the 90%+ of the people in Puerto Rico vote. It reminded me of sports teams. People feel an affiliation with their team, and whether the candidate wins or loses, you party.
I mean, I thought that was really inspiring. I mean, what, yeah. Election Day, a big party. That's what it should be, obviously. But, like, one thing I had a question about in there, is, you know, political parties, nationalism. I mean, do we really want to buy into this whole deal? I mean, do we want to treat it like a sports game, which is sort of like this nationalist-like frenzy, you know?
Which
like
is problematic.
Patriotism, nationalism, political parties. It's, right. It's all a big, you know, game that's kind of scary, yeah. You know, and who it excludes and who, you know, gets to be part of it. So, you know, right. What's the idea sort of getting behind a party, and what does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think right now, you know, what we're doing is it's like progressive nonpartisan organizing, right? So it's not necessarily you throw your weight behind your party, but you throw your weight behind your values, right? So you figure out what it is that you care about, like what actually would make you run out in the streets with joy, screaming, and want to party if you got that point of view in power, that value in power, right? And that's what we're trying to focus on. What is it that actually pulls us together and excites us and makes us happy, right? So, like, I'm a pleasure activist, right? So if there was one day when, like, everyone in the entire world could get hold of condoms and clean needles and, like, go out and do their thing, I would be just running around the street. I would really be crazy with joy. And y'all would just be like, I can't believe I saw her running down the street like that. She needs to get some sense. But that's what it is for me. And what we're trying to do is tap into what does that for people. And we're finding that more often than not, there are these common values that we have that we get excited about and that we want to make sure are central to the way the country is thinking about what's important and how we're making decisions and how we're making foreign policy decisions, how we, you know, how we guide our lives and live our lives. And we have something that we stand for, and we should be excited about it. We should be able to tell people we're excited about it.
You mentioned that you're a pleasure activist. What exactly does that mean? Maybe you want to talk a little bit about your work within AIDS activism.
And we just have a few minutes, but, like, right. You know, and how that ties into this book.
Well, I mean, I think it's really important to yeah, everybody's like, what does pleasure activist mean anyway? You know, I think that life should be a pleasure, right? And so I think, you know, a lot of the areas in which we traditionally find pleasure, people get disempowered, right? So it come from the harm reduction background, and it's just like, you know, people should be able to do what they need to do, whatever they decide to do, and have an enjoyable life, right? And for me, that's a value, right? And so that's why I'm organizing people to vote. I want to see all my, you know, HIV/AIDS organizers out there organizing their communities to vote, right? Because life should be a pleasure for them. I want to see all my active drug users organizing people to vote, because life should be a pleasure for them, you know? And we're doing this website, indievoter.org, where people will be able to actually organize their communities online, to do offline organizing. So they'll be able to tap in, like, friend of a friend network and do all that right there online. So, like, you can tap in and be like, I'm an active drug user. I'm interested in voting. I live in Brooklyn. Boom. You know, what is available to me? What are my resources and what do I need? All of that will be available at indievoter.org, you know?
And the idea is sort of not to change what people are working on now if they're organizing around harm reduction or, you know, direct action. It's to add this into the mix.
Exactly. I mean, the whole, you know, what we found worked best, and it's actually the Boston Vote model, right, is that you don't ask people to ever stop what they're doing, and because what they're doing is so important. That's a direct quote from Malia. And, you know, one of the things we found is, like, especially in the progressive movement, we are doing important work. You know, we're trying to, like, stop AIDS and stop war and get people educated and get people out of prisons. That is crucial work, you know, for sustainable human existence. We have to do this work. We're constantly in a battle to keep humans on Earth doing all right, you know, and, like, that is crucial. So we're not asking people, don't stop what you're doing. We're just going to bring this and add this component to what you're doing, right? You don't have to stop it. You don't even have to agree with electoral politics, but just have some trust in us, because I'm trying to do this work too. I come from an activist background. Have some faith in me that I'm trying to organize this as much as possible. We want to have a progressive governing majority. I'm 25 years old and I want to see it happen in my lifetime.
Mm. I was thinking of asking you a question, but just that last comment just, like, threw me off because it's true. You know, a lot of people are just like, it's a process and you have to wait and you might not see it in your lifetime, but I'm trying to see it in my lifetime.
I'd like to, you know. But, you know, I know we have a couple of minutes left. I want to make sure I get to shout out this party that we're having, because I want everyone in New York to come out. And, you know, if you like the sound of my voice or you want to hear more about pleasure activism or whatever it is, you want to come look at the book and hear some of the authors. We're going to be at Joe's Pub, and we're having the George Bush going away party is what they've been calling it. But it's the How to Get Stupid White Men Out of Office book release party for New York City. And we want it to be hot here. We have a lot of our writers are actually from New York, and we'll be there. Billy Upski Wimsatt will be there. I'll be there. Piper's going to be out there. It's hosted by Mahogany Jones and Baba Israel, who are both amazing and will give you a good time. And the performances I'm really excited about is Pete Miser, who's this brilliant, brilliant artist out of Williamsburg, and his band, and then El Maestro Presents, and they're dope, and, like, just one of the artists is Taylor McFerrin, who's like a human beatbox machine. I mean, he's crazy. So you got to come out and see him, and it's going to be DJ Jeannie Hopper on the table. So it's going to be an amazing party, and that's on Monday, April 12th at Joe's Pub, which is at 425 Lafayette Street. So you can take the 6 or whatever train you want over there. And it starts at around 11 p.m.
And can people, do people, if they want to get more information on the actual event, can they go to indievoter.org also?
Yeah, and they should actually, they can go to indievoter.org, but they should just call us up.
The number?
212-283-8879. And, you know, we don't have any more guest list places, so don't be trying to call me. I'm like, I heard you, I want to come. You know, just come through, and it's, you know, your money goes to a good place, so support
it's
us.
212-283-8879.
That's right, and you can check out indievoter.org. You can also get all this information on our website, www.riseupradio.org. You are listening to Rise Up Radio here on WBAI 99.5 FM. Stay tuned.
Flooded in white powder, like those motherfuckers running away from the Twin Towers. Gunshots rock the earth like a meteor shower. Bowling for Columbine Fair, giving the media power. Innocence devoured like a chicken spot snack box. Government cocaine cooked in the ghetto crack rock. Corrupt cops, false testimony at your arraignment. Check the check, constant struggle to make the payments. Working your whole life wondering where the day went. The subway stays packed like a multicultural slave ship. It's rush hour, 2:30 to 8 nonstop. And people coming home after corporate sharecropping and flossing. Mothers are trying to feed children, but gentrification is kicking them out of their building. A generation of babies born without health care, families homeless, thrown the fuck off the welfare. The killing fields uptown. We live in distress and hang the flag upside down. The sound of conservative politicians on television. People in the hood are blind, so they tell us to listen. They vote for us to go to war instantly, but none of their kids serve in the infantry. The odds are stacked against us like a casino. Think about it, most of the army is black and Latino. And if you can't acknowledge the reality of my words, you just another stupid motherfucker out on the curb, trying to escape from the ghetto with your ignorant ways. But you can't read history at an illiterate stage, and you can't raise a family on minimum wage.